The Holy Gospel according to St. Luke, the 7th chapter. Soon afterwards, Jesus went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went with him. As he approached the gate of the town, a man who had died was being carried out. He was his mother's only son, and she was a widow, and with her was a large crowd from the town. When the Lord saw her, he had compassion for her and said to her, "Do not weep." Then he came forward and touched the bier, and the bier stood still. And Jesus said, "Young man, I say to you, rise." The dead man sat up and began to speak. And Jesus gave him to his mother. Fear seized all of them, and they glorified God, saying, "A great prophet has risen among us, and God has looked favorably on his people." This word about Jesus spread throughout Judea and all the surrounding country. The Gospel of the Lord. I want to confess that I am a little disappointed in our former intern, who is now a Lutheran pastor, Pastor Tiny Isa, because she had made this promise that when she got a dog, she was going to name it Gus. She named it Otis. Now, the reason she was going to name it Gus is because I have a dog named Sadie, and we didn't want Deacon Gus to feel like Pastor Sadie had preferential treatment over him, and so we were going to name the next dog Gus, and she has fallen short of those expectations. So while she's a faithful and good pastor, she has not lived up to the promises she has made to us. Our dog at home is a black lab. This is a dog that loves my wife but listens to me. It is fascinating to watch that if my wife leaves the family room and goes back to the bedroom for the moment, the dog will get up and she will go to where my wife is and she will plop down right next to her. If my wife leaves and she goes out the front door, the dog will go to the front door, lay on the mat just inside the front door, and wait for her until she returns. Paw down like this and jowl sort of spread out with that forlorn look on her face of longing for her mama. It was fascinating last year as my wife had her seizure that led to the diagnosis of her brain tumor. In the seizure, the dog jumped up in her lap and tried to comfort her. But there is no doubt in my mind that this dog loves my wife. But I guess I have the alpha male voice in the family, for whenever we want the dog to do something, my wife defers to me and says, "Can you get her to go here? Can you get her to go there?" And it was me who took her to obedience training, and so when I give her a command, for the most part, she will obey that command and do what she needs to do. So those qualities of faithfully being with a person in love and being obedient are wonderful qualities to a dog. But what fascinates me is if we were to ask Christians to give qualities of what it means to be a Christian, what it means to have faith, we would describe it the same way. To be a Christian is to faithfully and lovingly be with other people all the time. Or to be a Christian is to be one who is obedient. And there is a call among Christians to be present with one another and to be obedient to the will of God. But I think we need to realize that even my dog has that capacity. So is there something greater that a human being has that they bring to this conversation about having a Christian faith? I believe that there is. That there is a wholeness. There is a maturity. There is a reflecting nature. There is an imagination, the capacity for innovation that only human beings can bring to the table. And that is also a significant part of what it means to be a Christian. And I want us to bring those full human capacities of maturity and reflectiveness and self-awareness and innovation to look at the difference between two words, the word compassion and the word empathy. Notice it is the word compassion that is used in the scripture passage today. Compassion is the older of the two words. It has been around for generations. Empathy is a newer word that came into existence in the early 1900s. It was intended to be a translation of a German word from the arts community, that when someone would look at a piece of art, the goal was for the person to try to find him or herself in that piece of art. To look at a painting, to find oneself in the painting, to look at a sculpture, to find oneself in that sculpture, to read a poem, to find oneself in that poem. And so empathy was meant to find oneself in that artwork. It really didn't appear as a word in the dictionary and gain any credibility until the 1920s, the 1930s. After World War II, the word empathy took on a new meaning. It moved from the art community to human relationships. I think it is fascinating that we have replaced the word compassion with the word empathy. Compassion means to suffer alongside of another person. Empathy has come to mean to suffer just as the other person is suffering. To make that person's suffering your own suffering, to the point sometimes when we can't tell the difference between one person's suffering and our own suffering. That's what leads us to say when we encounter someone in a difficult situation, I understand how you feel. And if you have a mature, responsible person, they will look at you and say, no, you don't. Because this is not your pain, it's my pain. To draw the distinction between suffering with someone and to suffer as the person, where two people become so morphed and fused together, we can't tell where one stops and the other starts. I'm celebrating the fact that it was finally last week that I feel like I finally got over the sinus infection that started before Christmas for me. It took several rounds of antibiotics and a lot of rest and a lot of frustration, and I kept the decongestant companies in business during that time. I should have told you who to invest in because their stock probably went up during that time. And it is frustrating when something comes into the human body, into the human system, and infects it and causes problems within the system. Edwin Friedman, a rabbi, claims that people can likewise bring in their own presence some type of infection in their own relationships. And he describes some of the ways that we can do that in our relationships. We can be a person who is easily hurt. And in being easily hurt, we like to be the collector of slights. Have you met someone who keeps the ledger? You know the ledger, I mean, of the list of things you have done wrong to that person? That's what usually comes out in fights between husbands and wives, that there's one moment where there's a fight, but all of a sudden the ledger from all 20 years comes out at that same time. The collector of slights, what does that do to human relationship? We can be people who won't admit to the possibility that there are times that we do and say things that can actually bring harm to other people, thinking we're doing what is helpful when actually we're undoing what is good for folks. We can be people who interfere in every other person's relationship, thinking that the other person can't make it right unless I'm right there to offer myself as the solution. We can become invulnerable to insight. I am so enlightened, I have nothing else to learn in life, and I feel sorry for the rest of you because you just won't ever get it. All of those can be the outcome of an empathy where we fuse so tightly together. And Rabbi Friedman concludes by saying, empathy never brings healing. Empathy is the privilege, he says, of those who don't have the responsibility of leadership. Empathy is the privilege of those who don't have responsibility. Jesus does not show empathy in this gospel text today. Jesus shows compassion. Now, the word that is used in this text for compassion, before it appears in the New Testament, did not mean compassion. It referred to the inward organs. In fact, the word for compassion that's used here is the word that is the root word for the human word spleen. And it is the source of human emotion to come not from the heart in the world of antiquity, but from the gut. And a negative term, if someone didn't show courage, then they would say the person didn't have guts. That's where the phrase comes from. In the positive nature, if they show courage, if they step out and take a risk, they are showing guts. They have courage. That is the root of that. It wasn't until it appears in the New Testament that Christians lay over top of it the sensitivity to the plight of other people that we now call compassion. And Jesus had compassion on the widow whose son had died. What does that literally mean? It means that he experienced the gut-wrenching pain of looking at a woman who saw her child dead. And one of my rules in life is that a parent should never have their child die before them. Jesus experienced the gut-wrenching pain of seeing what that does to another human being. We live in a world of ongoing accusing voices. And these accusing voices happen in so many places in our lives, we may not even know that the accusing voices exist. So I decide to have a quiet Saturday afternoon, even though I know that my lawn needs mowed. And my wife's not there to do it, which is her job usually, because she prefers to do it. But I'm okay with that decision until my neighbor starts his lawnmower. And then I sit there and think, should I be out mowing my yard because my neighbor is mowing his yard? Or I haven't done my spring treatment for my yard yet. It looks pretty decent. I wasn't feeling too bad about it until Kemlon, is that it? That always sounds interesting. Kemlon came in and sprayed my neighbor's yard. And now, should I have done that sooner? Those accusing voices are so prevalent in our lives. We see pictures of people on TV and on the internet that look perfect. It's an accusing voice because immediately we say, do I look as good as that person? How many of you say yes? Do it next time. I look better than you. It also might be rooted in deep-seated pain that you may have been raised in an environment where that accusing voice came from a father or a mother or other children in school. And they have such power because what they can do is they can plant that accusing voice inside your heart. And you start saying it to yourself after some time. But the greatest voice of accusation of our failure in life is death itself. Because in the end, we are judged for all we have done and what we have left undone. The wages of sin is death. God, in gut-wrenching pain, will not tolerate death having the last word. God, in gut-wrenching pain, will not let the voice of accusation be the last voice over our lives. God will not, in gut-wrenching pain, let our lives end by being buried deep in the earth, never to rise again. But God will raise us from the dead. And that is how the compassion of God changes the human situation. When we are transformed by the power of God, we function at a level of maturity and strength and imagination that exceeds anything we could have imagined. I want to read you a quote and see if you can guess which person said it. Imagination is more important than information. Imagination is more important than information. Was that Walt Disney or Albert Einstein? Albert Einstein. Human beings have the capacity for imagination and innovation. It's what the people around this miracle in the gospel witnessed. They believed that there was no longer a prophet who had captured a vision from God of what the world could be. And yet Jesus comes along and raises this young man from the dead. And they say, here is a prophet unlike we have ever seen. There is vision again. There is hope again. There is possibility again. The capacity to see something new. And God gives that gift through faith to each one of you. Take time this week to scoop up a good hand of Lancaster County's soil, if you will, please, and hold it in your hand and smell it and feel it and let your hands get dirty. And think about what that good Lancaster County soil can do. It can bring forth those beautiful blossoming trees on the west side near F&M and Wheatland. You drive over there every spring to see the flowering trees. That soil can do that. Hold that soil in your hand and think about what that soil can do as you eat the fresh strawberries that are being produced right now in all of the fields. And then the corn and the green beans and the tomatoes that come through this summer. Hold that soil in your hand and think about how this fall is that soil nourishing those trees that allows that beautiful explosion of color that we call autumn. We believe that soil has that capacity to bring out that newness, yet why is it that we believe that when we die, we go to earth, the soil can do nothing else? Earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, it's done. But that soil can also live again, can rise again as a resurrected being, a new being in life. Can I get a witness? The dead man sat up and talked. And yet we, with the faith to believe in resurrection, sit silently. Be a witness this week to what the compassion of God is doing in human life. Amen.